I'm Holly.
And I'm Haley.
Welcome to Mountain Mysteries, Tales from Appalachia. Welcome back.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Well, I'm not really doing well. I've been sick with whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, still, you know, week 1238 battling this illness.
Yeah.
It won't go away.
No. It's the worst.
The other night, I coughed so hard that I may have peed myself.
Oh.
And my child... I let slip. He's like, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I peed myself." And he said, "Mama, you need to like use the potty.
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. You're a grown up." I was like, "You're right.
Accurate.
Just no bladder control anymore, yeah. Well, and a cough will just send you right over the edge."
Yeah, I'm gonna. It's a thing.
It is a thing. You don't know what's going to come out when you start coughing hard.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Sneeze. All bets are off.
Blow someone out of the room. You got to be careful.
Oh, gosh.
Good time. So what's this story about?
Well, so we are going to go to Knoxville, Tennessee.
Been there.
I was looking for Tennessee stories this week. Because we went to Johnson City to celebrate my grandmother's birthday.
Yes.
To a seafood restaurant over there, which I know Tennessee and seafood doesn't sound like it would.
No, it doesn't.
Be a thing, but it's a really good place. We've been a few times. There's a Discount Furniture outlet over there that when we go visit there, we usually stop by this restaurant. So I looked it up on the Google. It said Tuesday.
Open.
Open. Not open Sunday or Monday, but open on Tuesday. Fantastic. So we load up in the car. We take off. We're going. Me and my whole family. Get there. And I'm like, my mom, like halfway into our journey, she's like, maybe we should call and make sure we don't need a reservation. I'm like, how many times have we been there? You just walk in, sit down. Don't need a reservation. It's fine. So we get there in the parking lot.
Like when Haley's proven wrong.
No one's in the parking lot. I'm like, oh my God, this place looks closed. Why is it closed?
You're like, wait, but it said on Tuesday.
Tuesday. So I pull up and I look at the sign on the door and I figured it was going to be like a, you know, due to short staffing, like everywhere else, they're struggling. Right. I'm like, well, it sucks, but okay. Look at the sign on the door and it says, due to the death of our mother, we are closed today. And I'm like, oh my God.
You can't
God.
Even be mad at that.
No. So I was like, oh no. And mom's like, see, I said you should have called. I was like, what are the chances that that's on the voicemail? Like, it's just going to say, like, they didn't do that. She calls and puts it on speaker. Due to a death in the family, we will be closed.
Thank you so much for calling.
I was like, oh my God.
Unfortunately.
And I'm like, well, we were already halfway here. There's like literally nothing between where I live and Johnson City.
It's true.
So I was like, what were we gonna do, like turn around and go back and then go to another town that's 45 minutes away from where we live? And I was like, no, I guess not. So we found another place. It was a little Cajun place. All got some shrimp.
I love good shrimp.
It was excellent.
Yeah.
So, you know, crisis averted.
Things worked out in the end.
Yeah. But and that
you
kind
were
of inspired.
Inspired.
Mm-hmm. It inspired me to go back to Tennessee to look
Wait
around.
A minute. The mother dying wasn't part of your story, was it?
No.
Oh, bummer.
I don't know what she died of, but
it didn't say
on the little sheet on the door.
It didn't say she was horrifically murdered because that.
No, it just said due to the death. But like, it was kind of a lot because usually they'll say like, oh, due to death in the family or whatever. It's a due to the death of our mother.
It's very precise.
We'll be closed today. I'm like, oh, okay, that's all right.
Yeah.
That's, so,
that's not good.
With that being said, we're gonna go to Knoxville, which is near Johnson City.
On the other side.
On the other side. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna go there, and we're gonna talk about the Frankenstein of Knoxville, Tennessee.
My ex-husband. No, that's Leon.
Leon.
He is my own. Frankenstein.
Yeah, no, not Leon. This is Dr. Stephen Foster.
Okay.
So, Dr. Stephen Foster was born in 1798. Wow, so taking it way on back.
Yeah.
In Massachusetts. He graduated from Dartmouth in 1821.
Me too.
And became ordained, became an ordained Presbyterian reverend in September of 1824.
Did not see that coming. Yep. Okay.
Yep. He went on after he graduated from Andover Theological Seminary, became this Presbyterian reverend.
Okay.
So real into science.
But also God.
But also the Lord.
And the Lord. So. He had Jesus between him and his textbook.
He did. Yep. So he was decided that's the route for him. 1825, Dr. Foster taught Latin and Greek language classes for a year in Virginia. What? Then he moved to Greenville College, which is now Tusculum College.
Okay.
I guess that's a college. In Tennessee. He then became pretty good friends with his boss there at the college. And when his boss moved to Knoxville, he went with him. He was like, you know, I'm going to teach somewhere else. I'm also going to go there. You're a good guy. So, like working for you, this is great. And that's hard sometimes when you are trying to find work and you have a good boss and you're like, oh, man.
And they're leaving and you're like, oh.
Take me with you.
Exactly.
So that's kind of what this was.
We have never followed any of our bosses, just saying.
We have not done that. They've been great.
Nor would they have wanted us to, no, to be honest.
They didn't want us.
Nope.
In 1827, Greenville College President Charles Coffin became
Coffin?
Yep.
I love it.
Yep. He became the first president at East Tennessee College, which is now the University of Tennessee.
Swanky.
And Coffin recruited Foster to teach ancient languages at the college. So he's like, yes, come with me. We'll do the thing. Teach the ancient languages. Foster was also a local historian and wrote an essay on the 1793 Cavett Station Massacre, which was published in the Knoxville Register newspaper on February 8th of 1832.
Sounds like we're going to have to talk about that as well.
I know. I don't have a whole lot of information on it right now, but I'm like, that's highlighted, starred.
On the list.
It's on the list now. Foster and Coffin, they had a great deal in common. Okay. They both were natives of Massachusetts.
Oh.
They worked as educators. They were both Presbyterian. So
there you go.
The Knoxville Register newspaper archives show that both Coffin and Foster were also elected leaders in Knoxville's Presbyterian organizations.
So they were moving up the chain.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
When Coffin returned to Greenville College in 1834, Foster became president of East Tennessee College. So Coffin moves on. He takes his place. His stint as president and his life were cut short by a fatal illness January of 1835.
Oh, dear.
So he dies in 1835. So, let's talk about kind of what makes him the Frankenstein.
Yeah, because now he's dead.
Yeah. I wanted to give you a little bit of history into his life.
Well, no, that's helpful.
And all of that. In life, Dr. Foster delivered many a sermon at the First Presbyterian Church in Knoxville. One sermon on April 12th of 1833 discussed intemperance.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, intemperance. Discuss the intemperance and the evils of alcohol. Alcohol was bad in the 1800s.
Well, and it continued. I mean, there was a whole temperance movement.
There was. The sermon was so well received, it was published as a 15-page pamphlet and was widely circulated. A copy of the sermon can still be found in the rare books at the University of Tennessee's special collections.
So, fun fact. People used to, particularly men, would drink in excess. There wasn't any kind of moderation. Nobody sat at the bar and was like, dude, I'm going to cut you off. You've had enough.
Yeah, or just like a social, hey, let's go grab one drink.
Yeah, you grab a drink and you go on. Yeah. This was excessive drinking, and the type of alcohol a lot of these individuals would drink would be like wood grain and things that could essentially kill you, but also really affect your behaviors.
Yeah.
And the big part of the temperance movement was trying to help individuals not drink as a form of coping because it made them violent. And so many families were actually torn apart because of it, because there was abuse in the family. Mm-hmm. Dads will become abusive towards his children, his wives. I mean, just a lot of stuff going on. So that's why the temperance movement was formed. It sounds very prudish.
Yeah.
But it was formed in that way and actually did make a lot of change. So I can kind of see where he's coming from creating this, because he's saying, listen, families are falling apart, essentially. And it's not biblical to drink to drunkenness.
Yeah.
Although I do think it's biblical to drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you like water? I'll turn it into wine.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah. So he's given these sermons doing the Lord's work.
He is.
So Dr. Foster's sermon on alcohol went beyond religion. It revealed his extensive knowledge of science and human philosophy, mm-hmm. And physiology mm-hmm. as well. Foster discussed the physical impacts of alcohol on the body in great detail. He explained how nutrients flow to the stomach, encounter gastric juices, are converted in the intestines, and then are transmitted in the form, this quote, transmitted in the form of vermilion blood through the arteries to the veins.
Okay.
So not sure that's accurate, but mm-mm. you know, it's the 1800s. What you gonna do? Foster said that the drunkard demonstrates, quote, corrupted flesh, adulterated blood, agitated nerves, stiffened muscles, contracted arteries, distended veins, consolidated coats of stomach of more than an inch in thickness, a liver bloated to double its size or shriveled to the mere consistence of pimples, a brain indurated to a hard and bony toughness, as well as other, quote, physical horrors of intemperance.
Wow. I mean, this just goes beyond beating your wife.
Yeah, it gets wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's clearly into science.
Definitely.
He's clearly into the human body.
Clearly he's loves like, Jesus.
This is interesting to me. So at some point in his life, he decides, you know what I want to do?
Oh no.
I want to revive a dead man using electricity.
I mean, why not?
He just is like, I like the science.
Just to see what would happen? Or is he going to, like, intoxicate him?
No, just because.
Okay.
So we've taken a wide step from, you know, the evils of alcohol, talking about the human body, to, you know, let's raise the dead.
And how does that not step against his spiritual ideology?
Right. Now, I will say this. This is all legend.
Okay.
This piece is. This,
okay.
This raising of the dead is all legend.
Okay.
So, we're going to just take that with you.
Okay.
As we go.
I got it in my backpack. Right. Let's do this.
So, he says, I want to do this. Revive a dead man using electricity.
Of course.
Sounds like something out of, you know, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, mm-hmm. which was written 11 years earlier.
Oh.
So, maybe got some inspiration. Foster was apparently well thought of in the community. He had cooperation from the local sheriff and use of the church. He built galvanized batteries to use to jolt the life back into the deceased man. And the sheriff's like, absolutely, let's do this.
How long has the person been dead? And like, where did he get this body from?
We're going to get into that.
Okay.
We're going to go there.
Yep. Is he like in the middle of the night digging somebody up?
No.
Okay.
He gets his chance to do this.
Oh, God. Because the sheriff's on board. The
sheriff's on board. In 1829.
God.
Two murderers were hanged just after noon on Knoxville's gallows, which is now Summit Hill.
That's a story waiting to happen.
Yeah. One man was Joshua Young, 67, of Knoxville, who confessed to killing his 64-year-old wife. Sad.
Very sad.
The second man was named James White, who is not related to the Knoxville founding White family.
Okay.
for your information. He was 23 years old, and he was convicted of killing a man named George W. Brown in Marion County. On August 19th, 1829, the Knoxville Register reported 3,000 to 5,000 people witnessed the, quote, solemn scene. They witnessed this hanging, so they came out to watch.
Of course they did.
Because that's what you do.
It's always public.
Yep. After White and Young were brought in a wagon from the jail, hymns were sung and two prayers and a sermon were offered. White, the newspaper reported, quote, then took leave by shaking hands with some of the bystanders before he was hanged.
Hey, thanks for coming out. Yeah, thanks, guys.
I'm so glad you're here.
I know you were really busy today. Thanks for coming out for my hanging. Yeah, it's really nice to see you guys. Good. Hey, how are you? I'm Chuck. Hey. It's weird.
Yeah, super weird. The nooses circled the men's necks, and, quote, about 20 minutes after noon, both were launched into eternity.
Launched into eternity.
That's what the newspaper says. Quote, they died without a struggle. After they were launched into eternity.
Swung into eternity? Yeah, that sounds a little better. Launched. Feels like they're in a rocket ship.
It's bad. Bad, bad. Young was buried on the hill at the foot of the gallows. Workers grading a road in June of 1868 actually exhumed his skeleton.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Former Knox County Sheriff George M. White, who was then an elderly man, told the Knoxville Daily Herald that the skeleton was Young's. He remembered how the two men were executed decades before and was like, yeah, that's where we put him. That's where he was.
And he stood up and the corpse shook hands with everybody and said, thanks so much for finding me. Thanks. How are you? I'm Chuck. Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming today.
They then put him in a potter's field off of Bethel Avenue.
Wonderful.
So they're like, we'll put him over here now.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I'm Chuck. It's nice to meet you.
It's nice to see you.
It's nice to see you.
I've entered this potter's field.
Exactly.
Yeah. So neither of the newspapers that we've kind of talked about throughout this article, throughout this story, mention what happened to White's body. It may have been carted a few blocks down to Foster's church because he's like, I want one of those bodies. So he took White's, which was located near the current Home Federal Bank on Market Street. So if you're in the area,
making a deposit,
just know that there are dead bodies around.
Yeah.
There, perhaps in the basement or in the sanctuary, with the pews pushed aside, Foster hooked wires from the galvanized batteries to the corpse. As he turned a switch powering the batteries, White's body apparently moved. His chest rose and fell three times. So they're thinking maybe he drew a breath.
He was being shocked.
I'm going to say that was an electric jolt.
Yes, when somebody shocks a body, even if they're dead, they're going to go.
Yep.
Yeah.
He then stopped. The legend says that Foster cut the current and pronounced that what God has declared dead isn't for him to revive.
As it shouldn't have been in the first place.
He's like, actually, this was a terrible idea. I should not have done this.
I get the idea around it, because, I mean, essentially, how many times have your parents shocked someone who probably doesn't have any vital signs, but they're trying to bring them back, you know? So I get that, but this is someone who you have that time to save versus someone who's just been dead a while.
Right, yeah. And you can't shock, like, that's the thing with television and seeing someone use a defibrillator to shock a person back to life. You have to put them in the, you know, the places they need to be on the chest. But also, you can't shock someone that's flatlined.
Yeah.
Like, the heart has to have a, quote, shockable rhythm. So it has to either be, like, quivering. There has to be some sort of
sound every here and there.
Yeah. Some sort of electrical activity has to be happening in the heart for you to jolt it back.
Yeah.
So that's why you'll see people do CPR until they can get the heart to get into that.
And how often is it? You're right, on TV you see and they've just completely flatlined and then they're like charging.
Right. And I think the statistic is like 70, 80% of people that you do CPR on, you never get back.
Wow.
I mean, I may not be that high, but it's a really significant number.
Wow.
That you just, you don't get them. And if you get them back, like by, you know, shocking, whatever, there's another large number of people who just did never recover.
Wouldn't you also like add like epinephrine and like those kinds of things? Yeah,
you're using drugs and you're using that to hopefully kickstart that electrical activity.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing CPR at the same time to get, you know, the drugs to flow because you're manually pumping the heart, which is getting oxygen to your brain, which is getting whatever medication circulating, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get that electrical activity to happen in the heart again. You can't just like shock a dead person and it
and work. Just hope for the best.
Yeah, it's not. It's not how that works.
Exactly.
So this call has been it your,
time
your
of
medical
death
corner.
Second time of death. 1835.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's just hilarious. Yeah,
it's bad. Don't do that. Don't shock dead bodies.
Mental note to self. Thank you.
You're welcome. So the legend of Dr. Foster.
There goes next Thursday.
That's the bummer. And we're out. The legend of Dr. Foster says he conducted the experiment at the Second Presbyterian Church.
Of course he did.
Where he served as reverend.
Why not? Because God's there.
Foster is not mentioned in any of the published books on the history of the church, but it is possible that he filled in as a substitute reverend in 1829.
Here's the truth. They're embarrassed.
Could be. Could be.
They're like, we don't need that on our our history.
The 1968 book called Her Walls Before Thee Stand, which is the history of the Second Presbyterian Church from 1818 to 1968, bestseller, would recommend. No, it's just history of a church. I'm sure it's great.
I tried to buy it, and it said it was sold out. Yeah, so, I mean, it was like, great. There's a waiting list.
I'm sure it's a fantastic book, but not really.
Haley's really... really building it up there.
It's gonna be great. But it describes the church as having no regular ministers from 1829 to 1831. And its quote pulpit was seemingly occupied by a series of supply ministers.
What are supply ministers?
I think they're like substitutes.
Just like substitute.
Yeah.
Will you be one of our supply ministers? And they just keep them in the supply room.
Mm-hmm. They pull them out when they need them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like paper clips.
Yeah. They just are like, yep, that you'll do for today.
Johnny, you're it today. You got something good? Psalms? Ooh, we love Psalms. Come on.
Yeah. Second Corinthians?
That's a good one.
Next week.
You know,
we'll Job. Come back to that. It's no. It's a little depressing. That one's a little sad.
And somebody pops up and says, Revelations! And they're like, we're not ready.
Get back
in the closet.
Get back
in there.
Never. Yeah, so I think it's just like substitute pastors.
Okay.
So they're thinking he might have been kind of part of that crew.
Okay. But so interesting how much he makes himself so prolific and yet nobody wants anything to do with him.
Right.
Yeah. I hear that.
So a little bit more about his life. So he's done this thing and now it's like, live the rest of your life. It's kind of just a blip on the radar for him. But he's just kind of an interesting guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, you know, lived a life. So Knoxville is not only where he worked and preached and, you know, tried to revive dead bodies. It's also where he fell in love.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah. Foster married Anne Allison Davis in 1831. Their love was the subject of a 1915 article in the Knoxville Sentinel titled A Knoxville Romance about, quote, Reverend Stephen Foster and Anne A. Davis wooed and won.
I mean, was she alive?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
she did live.
Good. Okay. Okay. So he didn't have to bring her back to life with his love.
No. Okay. She was alive. They had a son named John in February of 1833. Mrs. Foster also gave birth to a daughter named Sarah Jane in 1835. However, Stephen Foster, Dr. Foster, he didn't live to see the birth of his daughter. He died, like we said, in January 1835 from a illness.
Jeez, so, that sucks.
Yeah. The hardships for Anne Foster mounted later that year when her 2-year-old son, John, died on August 28th, 1835.
How devastating.
I know. It's pretty common, though.
It was, but then, I mean, that doesn't take away the pain someone would feel losing their husband and child in the same, and giving birth. So you're postpartum, you're a woman in the 1800s. Like, how am I going to support myself?
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So both Dr. Foster and his toddler son are buried at the First Presbyterian Church Cemetery. Stephen Foster's mother also placed a tombstone in Massachusetts to honor the lives of her husband, her son, Stephen Foster, and her grandson, John Foster. So he's actually buried in Tennessee, but there is a tombstone for him in Massachusetts as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
He must have still been pretty young then.
Yeah. So the kind of words that are engraved on his
epitaph,
that are engraved on his tombstone in Knoxville say he was a professor of ancient languages, an able instructor of youth, a faithful and devoted minister of the gospel, and a kind and affectionate friend. It concludes with a quote, though, which I think is really interesting and kind of just wraps this up really nicely. The quote says, "Mysterious are the ways, O Lord."
It's true. Here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not going to have a tombstone, but if you were, mm-hmm. what would you want to be written on it? Spicy ginger.
I mean, I don't know. That's a lot of pressure for the words.
I think that, I don't know, feels a lot of pressure for words.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
Haley.
Haley.
1997 to 2023.
Yeah. It'll be fast.
She was so young.
I'll get on that submarine.
She imploded.
It's so bad.
It's terrible.
It's awful. Thoughts and prayers. So, like I said before, this story may just be that.
It could be. A story. Or, I mean,
because
to say.
There have been people who have dug through microfilm, newspapers, other historical records, all at the Knox County Public Library, and they've uncovered no 1829 accounts of Knoxville's Dr. Frankenstein. So there's nothing that they've seen. But they say that doesn't mean the story isn't there in faded or hard-to-read print, or that the experiment didn't happen. Because this legend it's told in books, it's told on ghost tours of the area. I mean, so something happened.
Yeah.
But what it was, or if it was this, who knows?
Or a version of it.
Version of it. But this is kind of the legend of,
I like that,
Dr. Frankenstein. So Dr. Stephen Foster, the Knoxville Frankenstein.
The Knoxville Frankenstein. You find the most interesting stories, I swear.
It just kind of comes to me.
Yeah. Well, that seems about right.
Yeah. So that's it.
That was magical.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah. Good times.
I just don't know what to even say or do. I'm in shock.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Get it?
Don't shock dead bodies. Just don't do it. Don't do it. Oh my God.
Sinus rhythm.
Ah, that's what you hope for.
More epi.
Keep pushing it.
You just keep doing manual until it's time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody stand back. Clear. Charging.
Yeah, those AEDs, they make the little robotic voices on them are awful.
Are really creepy.
They're just like, no, shockable rhythm detected.
Yep.
Continue compressions.
Place paddles. And you place them underneath, like, you know, the left breast, and then up kind of more towards the shoulder on the right side. Yep. I just went through my research in CPR.
Yeah, I've got to do mine.
I saved many a dummy.
Nice.
Yeah.
I did stop the bleed. recently.
Nice.
We talked about that. Yep. I learned how to do tourniquets.
Yep.
My CPR is expired. I do need to get that renewed. So
bummer.
I think we're going to do that on teacher work days when I go back to school.
Nice.
Yay.
Mine comes up every odd year. So it has come up again.
I didn't have mine renewed for a long time when I was working in hospice.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have it.
Well, I mean, that does make sense.
Yeah.
But
and that was just for, you know, kind of some legal stuff.
Yeah,
that comes about with hospice.
That's true.
So I just didn't have, but never renewed
it. I was
going
to say, when we worked together, we had to have it.
Yeah, I had it then. But yeah, I haven't had it in a few
years. I have
years.
To have it now, just in case a client were to pass out in front of me and, you know, something were to happen, I could tend to them.
Yeah.
I would never want that.
No.
You wouldn't want me to, like, drop my laptop and come running to you and try and save your life. Like, maybe a mental health crisis, sure.
Yeah, we got you covered.
Yeah.
But the medical ones, we'll try our best.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all we can do.
Good luck. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. All right.
Well, this was fun.
This was great.
Haley, why don't you let them know how to get in touch with us?
Yeah.
So if they want to.
If you want to. Only if you want to.
And Haley's the one who reads all these emails,
mm-hmm,
I read the social media ones.
Yes.
So say mean things to her and nice things to me,
ooh,
please.
Yeah, I like it.
I've heard that.
All right. You can send us an email at mountainmysteries.appalachian@gmail.com. Find us on our Facebook page, Mountain Mysteries Tales from Appalachia. Find us on Instagram, mountainmysteries.appalachia. Or go check us out on our Patreon for some additional content at patreon.com/mountainmysteries.
We do have a lot of cool content.
We do. Every once in a while, we'll yank one out of the Patreon vault for our main channel when we...
Well, and I was going to say, we did that this week, actually. Two weeks ago.
Yes.
I can't keep up.
It's fine. Our schedules in the summer sometimes get a little crazy.
They do.
So it's nice to have those there as backups as needed. We try not to do it too often, but...
That's true.
When illness happens
or summer.
Summer vacation plans and things like that, and we just can't get it together to record. It just happens that way.
Well, I want to give a huge shout out to Martinsburg, West Virginia.
Ooh.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Well, until next week, Haley.
Until next week. Bye.
Bye.